In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and Ben's here too, sitting in for Jerry, the illustrious Ben, who's doing his thing really well. That makes this Stuff You Should Know.
Hey, just so the listeners know, I finally met Ben in person.
Oh, yeah? Was there a handoff?
Athens, Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
No, there wasn't a handoff, but I went to that that REM tribute show in Athens, and Ben lives in Athens.
Yeah. So tell me about that show. Didn't, like, Michael Shannon reunite REM somehow?
Well, Michael Shannon and Jason Narducci got together a band to play some REM tribute shows, basically playing all of Murmur and Chronic Town, and then like another 15 early deepish cuts.
Okay.
And in Athens, as happens at the 40 Watt in Athens when there's REM things like that, the boys tend to come out. And that night, all of them came out.
Wow.
And shared a stage for the first time in, like, you know, they said 17 years, but it feels like more than that. But yeah. It was great.
Boy, that was something, huh? Because 40 Watt is not it a big venue. It's a tiny something. Black box for everybody who's never been there.
Yeah, a couple hundred people maybe. But it was, you know, all of them perform. Like, you know, Peter Buck shows up a lot and performs. Bill Berry is starting to come out and perform a little bit every now and then. Mm-hmm. Mike Mills, if you start singing an REM song in your backyard, he'll probably pop out from behind a tree and ask if you want some backup.
Right.
But Stipe never performed, so when he jumped up, the place was just vibrating, and I was like, it's happening, but he didn't perform. He just was very sweet and said thank you, and they all kind of congregated for a minute, and that was it.
Oh, but he didn't perform? That's crazy.
No, he didn't sing. I think everyone was just like, it's finally going to happen.
And he said, nope.
No, but I get it, but it was a great night, and met old Ben.
That's awesome, man. That's a heck of a story.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to kick off our llama episode, frankly, if you ask me.
And I agree, I think. And you know what? I will agree because when I was very, very briefly in a band in college, I don't know who had it, but someone in the band knew a friend with a llama farm.
Wow.
Who knew that was coming? So when we would go out to play in this big barn, we would drive through the llamas.
That makes sense because somebody out in Georgia having a llama farm is so 90s. That is such a 90s thing to do, you know?
Totally, yeah.
It's funny because there was an attempt to introduce llamas to the United States well before the 90s and even the 80s when they kind of became a thing for the first time in the U.S. All the way back in 1914, the mayor of Buenos Aires tried to give Secretary of State William Jennings Bryan the gift of a llama. And that's when they would have entered the U.S. the first time, but it turned out that that particular llama had foot and mouth disease, so it wasn't allowed in.
Well, and it's also interesting because llamas, their back and forthness with North America is interesting because they originated in North America on the Central Plains,
yeah,
like 40 million years ago. And then about 3 million years ago, they dispersed to South America. They were like, we're heading south, not for the winter, but perhaps forever.
Permanent vacation like Aerosmith.
Exactly. Boy, music refs are just flying all over the place.
Sure.
And at the end of the last ice age, the camelids, which we'll see, they're part of the camelid family, they went extinct in North America.
Yeah.
Even though that's where they started.
Yeah. So you just kind of touched on something that I think is maybe the fact of the podcast. Llamas are members of the camelid family. They share a common ancestor with camels themselves. Hence, camels originated in North America. Just mind-blowing to me. Like, take that, Central Eurasian steppes.
Now, were there actual camels here?
Yeah. I believe, I looked it up, and I can't remember exactly, so I'm sure I'm getting it dead wrong. But I believe camels themselves did evolve here in North America and crossed over into Eurasia through the Bering Land Strait. Same with horses.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. So USA, right? But also Mexico and Canada.
Yeah, sure. We were USA back then, right?
Exactly.
They were domesticated. They're actually one of the oldest domesticated animals in history, in the history of animals. They're in the Andean highlands of Peru. Mm-hmm. Between 4,000 and 5,000 years ago, they were domesticated. And then back in the United States, they were re-domesticated, and that's obviously the only way they exist in the U.S. now.
Yeah, so it was a little confusing to me, and I went and hashed it out. Llamas have never existed in the wild. Llama-like animals and species that are related to llamas, like the guanacos, they're wild. And if you look up a guanaco, it looks like a wild llama. But llamas were domesticated from the outset. They were bred from guanacos, so they never existed in the wild, and they still don't, which I find fascinating. They were bred out of whole cloth as a domesticated animal. It was never not domesticated. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it's super cool. And they're specifically bred because they're a beast of burden.
Yeah, like the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, man, another music rep.
I'm going to keep them coming, okay?
You totally should.
Okay.
And we'll talk about their, you know, their beast of burdenness and how it's okay as far as that goes. But they also provided meat, obviously, to herdsmen. They could make candles out of their tallow, their clothing, although it's not quite like, it's not as effective, I guess, as alpaca wool. Mm-hmm. They're still shorn, and we'll talk about that as well. And, you know, their hides and things like that, their poo-poo they could use for fuel. They were a very useful animal.
Yeah, super useful. The only large animal domesticated in the ancient Americas. And they definitely came in handy. They were put to good use. And they were, like we said, they were never a wild animal. They were always bred. So humans always had a hand in how llamas were. And the llamas that are around today, again, they were bred from guanacos. Guanacos, right? That's how you'd say that, right?
It's got to be. Or guanaco, I'm not sure.
Right. But they are, some people say that these are separate. Guanacos and llamas are separate. Other people say, no, they're both members of the subspecies Llama glama.
Isn't that great?
Right. And then collectively, llamas, guanacos, vicuñas, and alpacas are collectively known as lamoids, not to be confused with graboids. And that they're still related to camels because they're all originally camelids. There's a lot of differences between them, especially with body shape or body morphology. But as we'll see, they also share a lot of characteristics with camels still. Camels are from the Americas, by the way.
Totally, but they don't have that hump.
That's one. They're much smaller.
Yeah, they're smaller. They're a little more slender. They do have long legs. They got the long necks. They got those cute little short waggy tails.
Yes.
Smaller heads. If you look at their face, they have a split upper lip and big pointy ears. And they smile. I feel like we do. Maybe we're, have a predisposition to highlight animals who smile at us.
Sure.
I feel like we've done that a lot.
That really hijacks our brain wiring.
Oh, totally. But you look up llama smile and you're going to see some pretty cute stuff.
Yes. They also have panoramic vision because their eyes are on the sides of their head, so they can see predators from coming a mile away. And what's something interesting about llamas that I didn't know about is they are naturally aggressive toward predators. They don't shy away. If they see like a fox or a coyote or something, they go after it and they chase it off, which is pretty cool. As we'll see, it's very useful.
Yeah, nice defense. Although I took that their main defense is like to charge at something like that, mm-hmm. but it's sort of a lot of bluster because they don't have a lot of defense.
No, it is bluster, but they also have a lot of size on like any coyote or any fox, certainly. I didn't realize how big they can get. A llama gets about 4 feet at the shoulder, pretty tall. Mm-hmm. It's 1.2 meters. And males can weigh between 300 and 400 pounds, which is 135 to 180 kilograms. That's a hefty, husky little boy there.
Yeah. Females can weigh between 230 and 350. Mm-hmm. And I saw a video of a guy whose llama busted out on his farm and went after the dog. And it was funny. He wasn't harming the dog, but he was chasing this dog. And they're pretty fast. They're way faster than I thought. They can hit a max speed of 40 miles an hour.
That's insane.
Which is just, I mean, I've seen them run, but I didn't think it was that fast. It's kind of like when a camel runs. I think it's a little deceiving how fast they are because of their big, lopey, long legs.
Right, right.
It doesn't have that, like, intensity of a horse gallop.
Right.
But it helps them run at a predator or, most importantly, run away from a predator.
I mean, 40 miles an hour is really, really fast. That's like roadrunner fast.
Yeah.
But imagine the roadrunner with a furry coat and a big old smile while he's running 40 miles an hour.
What's going on with those feet, too?
So I say we talk about the feet and use it as a cliffhanger to take a break and then come back and talk about how those feet come in handy. How about that?
Wowie wow.
So remember I said that they share a lot in common still with camels?
Mm-hmm.
Both of them, neither one of them are hooved animals. Camels have two toes, and so do llamas. Camels have toenails in the front, but they don't use those for walking. On the bottom of the feet of llamas and camels are soft pads, very leathery and soft, mm-hmm. that are not hooves, which means that when they're walking on like rocks and mountains and stuff like that, they can actually kind of grip those rocks with their feet and their split two toes, which makes them very sure-footed, which again made them very useful in the Andes, which again leads us to a message break.
All right, we'll be right back.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. So, Chuck, I think we kind of started to set it up pretty nicely. Llamas are sure-footed, to say the least.
That's right. One of the benefits of being unhooved, or maybe even anti-hoof, I've never talked to a llama.
They've got no problem with hoofed animals. So they're fine with it.
All right. So they're not anti-hoof.
No.
But that, like you said, that makes them very sure-footed, but it also, it doesn't tear up the side of a mountain like a hoof does, because they got a little give there.
Yeah. So if you want to walk around and not accidentally start off a rock slide, bring a llama instead of like a cow.
That's a good point. I mentioned we would talk about their, whether or not they were good beasts of burden. They're okay. A llama that's about 250 can carry a load that's 100 to 135 pounds, maybe 15 miles, maybe 20 miles in a day. That's not bad at all. It's no ox or horse. But if you've got a lightish load and you're going, not the furthest distance, then you can do a lot worse than a llama.
It's true. They couldn't carry a human. They couldn't pull a machine. And I saw it's spelled out that even if the Inca, who really put the llama to good use, had discovered the wheel, the llama still wouldn't have been able to be attached to anything bigger than probably like a wheelbarrow size type thing. They just don't have that strength, but they are good pack animals and that they can carry a lot of weight, just not like human weight. So if you have a ton of stuff, say you're mining silver, pre-Columbian contact, you got a silver mine set up at Potosi, you need a lot of llamas. And apparently there was a Spanish observer, didn't catch their name, who visited Potosi, which is a really important silver mine in what's now Bolivia, and found that the Inca were employing what they guessed to be about 300,000 llamas.
Yeah.
Transporting the silver ore from the mine to be refined.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of llamas. And again, if each one of those can carry over, 100 pounds, then they're moving some silver for sure.
Sure. And I it probably goes without saying, but you could also delight your child, as long as your child's under 100 pounds, and let them ride the llama too. They could have done that.
Sure. I'm sure there was an Incan birthday party at some point where a kid rode a llama.
That's right.
They're also, as far as being up there in the high dryness, they have a very high thirst tolerance, which is super handy. Obviously, has a lot to do with their camelness. They have a lot of endurance. They can eat a lot of different kinds of shrubbery.
Yeah.
Which is great. And their blood has a really unusually high amount of hemoglobin. And as we all know, that protein is going to carry oxygen from the lungs throughout your body. So that's an animal that's basically built to survive a high elevation where it's dry and where there's lots of, sort of dry grasses and shrubs to eat.
So as animals themselves, without the human touch of being used as pack animals, just if you have some llamas hanging out with one another, I can't believe how I just put that.
Right.
They are gregarious, which means they need social, social groups. Like, you don't really want to have just a single llama, or I even saw just a couple llamas. You want to have a handful because they have specific ways of living. And typically, a llama family group will have a single male and a handful of females, and then whatever offspring were born by those females that year.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll see why in a minute. If you are the head of a family, if you're the male leading that group, you're going to be pretty territorial. You're going to defend your family. If a competing male comes in there that doesn't have a family, that's like, hey, I might like to take yours, they will be pretty aggressive toward that, even though they're not super aggressive animals.
Mm-hmm.
drive them out of there and say, go back to your bachelor pad. And by bachelor pad, we mean the group of males that don't have families that all just seemingly hang out together and play cards.
Yeah. There's another thing, too, that is really just loving about llamas. They actually will adopt and protect other species of animals.
Uh-huh.
Remember how I said they're naturally aggressive toward predators? They'll actually defend other kinds of animals that they consider part of their group on, say, like a farm or a ranch from predators.
Yeah. I saw that they would adopt sheep. And I wonder, I mean, they'll probably do this with all the animals, but I wonder if it's because of sheep, you know, in the face at least. And there are some similarities there, I think.
That or the llamas are familiar with the whole Ba Ram U message that allows you into the sheep family.
Or maybe it was a particularly, you know, interested male llama who saw that sheep and was like, hey, shawty, you want to join our family?
Yeah. For some reason, I'm disturbed by that.
You probably should be. They communicate with each other mainly through body language. Their posture can kind of tell you a lot. Their ears apparently are going to indicate their mood.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make a lot of noise. Llamas are pretty quiet if you have a llama farm. But they will like vocalize if there are predators around, and little mummies and babies can hum at one another, like back and forth, kind of sing to each other. And it's very sweet.
Did you watch that YouTube I sent you?
Oh, you know I did.
So there's a YouTube, I can't remember the exact name, but just look up llama hum, I think it'll come up. But there's a baby llama drinking from a bottle, and the mom's standing by watching. And the baby's just humming while it's drinking. The mom hums back a little bit. It's really, really sweet.
It's pretty great. And they are gentle for the most part, but they are a little bit stubborn, too, because if you put too much weight on them, if you're not treating them right, then they're just like, I'm just going to have a sit-in, basically. They won't budge. They won't move. They will spit at you. They might hiss or kick at you.
Yeah.
And they're just like, no. That's not – llamas don't play that game, homie.
All that behavior is shared in common with camels, too. Camels are just like that. Also, one other thing about the vocalizations, when you said they warn of predators, I looked that up, too, and it sounds like a fork being scraped across a metal plate.
Yeah, it's pretty aggressively annoying.
Yeah, it is. That's what it is. It doesn't scare them off. It just annoys them away.
Yeah, they're like, fine. Yeah. Jeez.
So we said that the family groups consist of the offspring that were born that year. That's because the young, the little babies get to hang out with the moms who are very attentive of them for that first year. And then after that, the dominant male chases the baby off after its first birthday. For a couple of reasons, it makes sense. So number one, if it's a boy, it doesn't want to have to fight over the females with the boy. Mm-hmm. But if it's a girl, it doesn't want to have a girl around that it might mate with and kind of taper the gene pool a little bit.
Right.
So it makes sense biologically and genetically for the dominant male just chase off female and male young.
Yeah, totally. They have a gestation period about 11 months. They only have one little BB at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And the male has, you know, they have a little harem around them because they're polygynous. They will mate with all the females in their family that will accept that. And they release, it's an induced ovulation. So once they do that thing, they're going to release an egg within about a day or a day and a half after mating.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just withholding any jokes. So did you say that they gestate for 11 months?
Yeah.
Okay. And their offspring are called Kriya?
Yeah, and they're like any smallish, long-legged mammal, a little 18 to 20-pound llama standing for the first time within that first hour is just something that everyone just needs to make part of their life.
Yep, for sure. And after that first hour that they stand, they can expect to live about 15 years from that moment on average as far as lifespan is concerned.
Yeah, not bad.
Speaking of little baby llamas being born, there's a movie I watched recently, another A24 knock it out of the park movie called Lamb. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. I think I know the one with the what's her name?
Rumi.
Yeah.
What's her last name? I want to say Mapiece, but it's...
I think it's Rapiece.
Rapiece, that's right.
I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it, but I haven't seen it, but there's almost no way to talk about it without spoiling it, right?
I'm not going to, but I'm just going to say, I'm going to encourage you to please see it as soon as possible. It's so good. And I started to watch it in subtitles, and then I realized they weren't talking that much. And when they were talking, it was kind of distracting from the visuals, which are just lovely. So I actually watched most of the movie in Icelandic. And you can just tell from the conversations and the context generally what they're talking about.
Oh, that's funny.
Enough that I don't feel like I missed anything from the movie. I probably missed some very subtle things here or there, but I got the broad strokes for sure. But I think I'll probably go back and watch it with the subtitles to see what I missed. But however you watch it, just watch it. It's so good.
Yeah, it was on my list and I kind of forgot about it. I know what the deal is. I just hope it's not a case where I'm talking about a part and you're like, yeah, that's when blank happens. And I'm like, no, that's not at all what happens. You weren't reading the subtitles.
Right, exactly.
It's actually far more disturbing and sad.
It's possible. It is an A24 movie.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to shout out Lamb because it was good.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Should we take a second break here now and then come back and talk about how valuable llama fleece has been?
Yeah, let's do that. And we'll talk about that llama fleece right after this.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
All right. Well, quickly, before we talk about llama fleece, I kind of forgot until I started researching this that there was a book series for kids called Llama Llama.
Okay.
And boy, oh boy, did I have to read a lot of Llama Llama for those first few years.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about it. But now I'm like, oh, my God, Ruby had like, I feel like 20 of those Llama Llama books.
Is it like about a llama that solves mysteries?
No, it didn't solve mysteries. And I'm trying to remember the thrust of it. I think it's just about a llama that's like always getting in trouble and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that kind of llama.
Like every children's book.
Sure.
But we were going to talk about fleece. Their fleece is pretty good. They get sheared about every 2 years. They don't produce the most fleece in the world. You get about 6.5 to 7.5 pounds of fiber every 2 years. And like I said, it's not like that, like that wool of the alpaca that makes for such a wonderful, warm experience.
Yeah, it's also not like cashmere, which everybody knows it's the gold standard for soft wool and fleece, right? But I was reading an article by a historian named Emily Wacklid, W-A-K-L-I-D, from Boise State, who wrote a piece on The Conversation about llamas and the natural history of llamas. And apparently one of the things that the Inca used to do was bury llamas sacrificially and ritually on land that they were claiming as their own. They're like, we're the ones with the llamas, because I don't know if we said this or not. They were never exported outside of the Incan Empire until after the Spanish came. So the Inca had like a lock on the llama. So they would bury llamas, mummify them and bury them on land that they were claiming as part of their territory. And so a thousand years later, archaeologists and anthropologists came along and dug these llama up. And what they found is that these incredibly well-preserved llamas actually used to have fleece that was like on par with cashmere, and that it just got lost over time as the Spanish came along and were like, we have cashmere. We're just going to eat these llama instead.
Yeah. And it's crazy. And I guess just the reason they didn't remain that way is because they left the area and went somewhere else.
No, they were no longer bred so selectively for their fleece. They were more bred to be meat bearing.
I gotcha. Well, I know that while they were meat bearing for the Incas, that they were highly revered. It wasn't just like, hey, we're going to raise and kill this animal.
Right.
They were very much revered in their sort of cultural and spiritual beliefs. And while they did sacrifice them along with alpacas, they were, you know, they ate the meat at big, like, important community celebrations. Mm-hmm. They would do it to honor the gods, specifically the rain gods, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, and they would sacrifice and bury them along with like jewelry and stuff like that.
Yeah. So they also today you can see llamas dressed up in like pretty ribbons and hats, little cute little hats, in like parades in areas like Bolivia. And they still, it's just been carried down over the generations. They're still very traditionally revered, right? There's an explanation that apparently some kinds of llama herders or llama farmers in the Andes still consider llamas basically a conduit to the spirits of the mountains. The Huamani is what they're called. And that the llama don't actually belong to these humans. They're just kind of tending the llama. They're taking care of the llama. And so they engage in all these rituals, which on their face sound really bizarre, like marrying llamas, right?
Oh, man. It's so cute.
It is cute. So they will take llamas and they'll be like, you're going to marry Esther over here.
Right.
Fred. And so Fred and Esther are made to get married. And I guess they lay down in a marriage bed or something like that. And all of this sounds like so weird. And like, of course, it's just spiritual and mystical. So this kind of has this just bizarre cast to it. But, and I love it when this happens, when like a custom turns out to have like a practical reason behind it.
Mm-hmm.
The llamas that go along with this are like, yeah, I'm going to lay down in this marriage bed with Esther. This is fun.
Right.
They prove themselves to be more docile. So those are the ones who are less likely to be slaughtered for meat or oil or tallow for candles. They're going to be kept around and they're going to breed more and more so that the llamas in this flock become more and more docile generation to generation.
Yeah. Amazing. And I guess that's why we have the sort of sweet, smiley, gregarious friends that we have now, right?
Exactly. You would not have wanted to meet a llama from 5,000 years ago.
No.
You'd black your eye.
Big trouble.
Yeah. One more thing about the wool and the fleece, though, Chuck, is that, like, while it is much coarser, although surprisingly light, apparently the hairs themselves are hollow, they're working on getting it back to something akin to cashmere. It's just going to take a very long time, but they've kind of gone back to the traditional caregiving that they had pre-Spanish.
Awesome. What is cashmere even? Isn't it some kind of goat?
It's a goat.
Okay.
Yeah.
But like a special goat, right?
Well, yeah, if it has cashmere, it's pretty special and expensive. What? That's an expensive goat.
But what I meant is, it's not just any old goat has cashmere, right?
No, I don't know the kind of goat. It might be a cashmere goat. It probably isn't. I will look it up while you talk. How about that?
Okay, sure. Because most of the goats I pet, I love them, but their hair feels like it's a horse brush or something.
Right. And their eyes make them look like emissaries of Satan himself.
Oh.
It's true. That sideways slit eye is very, very evil looking.
Did you change or did you think that before the Witch movie, or did you even see that?
The what movie? Oh, The Witch?
The Witch.
Oh, my God. I love it. Yeah. I've always thought that.
Okay.
For sure.
That certainly reinforced it, though.
Oh, yeah. It didn't do the goat population any favors with me.
No. God, what was the name of that guy? He had a great name in the movie. I can't remember.
The dad?
No, the goat.
Oh, like.
It was like something like Ugly Sam, but it wasn't Ugly Sam.
It was like Black Billy or something.
Evil Black? Evil Bart?
Bluebeard?
No, that's not it. And I know people are screaming at their.
Black Phillip.
Black Phillip, was that it?
Black Phillip was it, and in a double whammy of quick research, the cashmere goat is called the cashmere goat.
Oh, of course.
And it just so turns out that Black Phillip was a cashmere goat.
Well, look at this. It's all coming full circle.
That last part was a lie.
Oh, Black Phillip isn't?
He was not a cashmere goat, no.
Oh, geez, man. that was a weird thing to trick me over.
You just got pummeled all over the place, huh?
I did. All right. So let's move on then, because this to me, we kind of saved the best for last as far as, you know, llamas are great. We love them. They smile. They spit. They'll carry some stuff for you. You can go visit them and pet those long necks.
For sure.
And they're wonderful. But they are some of the most valuable research animals around, and research animals that you can take very good care of, and because all they need are just like small samples of their blood for this stuff.
Yeah, and the reason why is because they're after llama antibodies. Just like we have antibodies that attack, or they tag, they destroy, they say, hey, go get this virus or this bacteria cell over here. Antibodies fight foreign invaders in your body. Well, being mammals and being alive, llamas have the same thing. They have antibodies too, but theirs are very specific. Apparently llamas and sharks, and I can't remember, there might have been something else that has these very specific antibodies that are way tinier, way simpler, and way more stable than the super fruity, highfalutin, complex antibodies that we produce. And that makes them extraordinarily valuable because they can target viruses and diseases that human antibodies can't.
Yeah, the camels was the other one. Okay. No surprise.
But sharks, that just kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm pretty sure we'd mentioned that at some point in an episode.
I remember the horseshoe crab blood used to detect some, used in some medical test, but I don't remember the shark.
It may have been
thing.
One of our ill-advised videos from the old days. I'm not sure. But yeah, the llamas, they have the antibodies that are formed in only two long chains, as opposed to the four chain antibodies that most mammals have. And this structure has really paid dividends in a lot of ways. And one of the biggest ones has been to neutralize specifically HIV, and specifically all 60 HIV strains that they've tested. Those llamas have antibodies that can work together and just neutralize that stuff.
Yeah, and here's why. The antibodies are smaller. They're called I've seen it both ways, but I think the antibodies that scientists create based on llama antibodies are called nanobodies because they're very, very small. But being small, they can connect to receptor sites on viruses that have very, very small receptors. And humans have these large, clumsy antibodies that just kind of slap around on the outside of the virus cell and don't do anything. They can't attach to it. They can't attack it. They can't keep it from connecting with the cell. The llama antibodies can. And HIV happens to be one of those viruses with the very tiny receptor sites that a llama antibody just goes up to and says, you're with me now.
Yeah, for sure. Also, with potentially COVID-19, it is similar to HIV in the way that the nanobodies from the llama can bind super tightly to that COV2 virus.
Yeah.
And, you know, you may be able to thank a llama one day for COVID progress.
Yeah, for sure. I think they've already found, because COVID is like SARS, that's right. It's also closely related to MERS. I think they found that that can be used for that as well. They also, it's so weird, they've also figured out how to use these llama antibodies as biological warfare detectors too, because they don't just work on viruses, they work on bacteria as well, and other biological foreign invaders.
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable. So scientists for a while now have been working on devices, they're biosensors, so they're, you know, obviously part biological, that can detect like the very first hints of something bad going down biologically, which is what you want. You want super early detection. And these sensors are made up of antibodies. And, you know, in the past, they were human cloned antibodies called immunoglobulin G. So I little g, big G. Mm-hmm. And that's what they use. So the idea is that, you know, somebody would launch like a cholera bomb or a smallpox bomb or something like that.
That'd be so bad.
It would be really, really bad. And all of a sudden you have this biosensor that can immediately detect that. And the llama biosensors work way better than the other ones.
Yeah, the human ones work in concept. And I believe like in actuality too, but they're so fragile because human antibodies are fragile, because they're complex, because they have like heavy chains connected to light chains. They're just really fragile. They don't hold up well in harsh environments. They just totally fall apart at 150 degrees, 65 degrees Celsius or more.
They're expensive.
They are very expensive to reproduce because, again, they're super complicated. And all of the stuff that llama antibodies are not compared to human antibodies make it that much more valuable and precious in applications like this, because they're simpler, they are sturdier, and they are hardier too. They can survive in much harsher environments. So it's like we figured out this concept of using antibodies to detect biological warfare in the air the moment it's launched. But we've replaced these kind of shoddy antibodies, the human antibodies, with much sturdier, more reliable antibodies. So we actually can do this now.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. And you know, you and I are not big fans of animal research or using animals in research like this. Yep. But from everything I saw, this was like a pretty decent scenario where these llamas are treated very well. They are in captivity anyway,
right,
as a species.
Yeah.
And they're drawing, you know, just small amounts of blood from these llamas to build this huge library. I think they have more than a billion different, they're called, I wouldn't even know how to say that, SDABs, single domain antibodies, basically. Mm-hmm. And it seems like a win-win.
For sure. Because they're so good at drawing blood that the llamas don't even stop smiling.
Right. Oh.
One other thing I saw, if you ever see a llama with its ears turned forward and maybe even leaning forward a little bit, that llama mm-hmm. is curious. It wants to know what's going on. It wants to meet you. It wants to hang out.
You know, if I'm not mistaken, Ruby went to a kid's birthday party where you can like have farm animals mm-hmm. on site. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure there was a llama there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there was. Ever since the 80s, like they became like a common thing in the United States.
Yeah.
For my 35th birthday party, Yumi had a petting zoo, including a llama there.
I was there, my friend.
Did you ride the horse?
I didn't ride the horse, but I ate some, I mean, if I may reveal your catered food.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
You guys had McDonald's, and I just remember humongous trays of stacked cheeseburgers and trays of French fries, and it was a great, great party.
You forgot the Taco Bell tacos on another tray.
Oh, I don't know. I don't even know if I saw those.
Yep, there was McDonald's cheeseburgers and Taco Bell tacos. And we even borrowed the trays. We asked them if we could borrow some trays, and we actually took them back after the party.
That seemed like 100 years ago.
It was. Maybe 150, oh, man.
So long ago. It's good times, though.
Yep, good times, had by all. We just had one all together talking about llamas. And if you want to know more about llamas, then go out and meet one. And since I said that, it's time for listener mail.
Instead of listener mail, we're going to take this opportunity to reinforce that we are going out on tour this year.
Oh, boy.
And this is it. These are all the cities we're doing for the year. We rarely have them all locked in this early, so we're pretty excited. But May 29th, 30th, and 31st, we'll be in Medford, Mass, outside of Boston, then down to D.C., and then back up to New York City, finally, at Town Hall there.
Right. And then what about August?
August 7th, 8th, and 9th, we'll be in Chicago, then Minneapolis once again. We're so happy to be back there, and we're super excited to add Indianapolis to our list of cities that we've never been to.
Yep. And then what?
And then we're going to wind it all down in September, back in Durham, North Carolina, at the Carolina Theater there on September 5th.
Such a lovely place.
It was great. And then closing it out in Atlanta once again on September 7th. And you can go to our website, go to these venue websites to get tickets. And as a reminder, please make sure you are only at venue websites, because a lot of times it'll just say, stuff you should know tickets. Oh, here they are, $180. That sounds expensive. If you ever see tickets that are more than, like, I think the highest ever is like $60 or something. Maybe 65 some places for like front row.
For face value. Like the,
yeah, for face
they'll
value.
Add, like, some of those ticket vendors add a bunch of stuff, but like the face value shouldn't be more than that, right?
Yeah, so if you see a ticket for more than that, then that means you're not on the right website.
Or if you're required to pay only in cryptocurrency, you might want to go to a different website too.
But we're super excited. It's a great show, and we can't wait to see everybody.
Yeah, come on out, everybody. If we may toot our own horns, it is loads of fun for us, and it seems, based on how people respond, for the audience as well.
Yeah.
Yes, you can go to linktree/SYSK, or you can go to stuffyoushouldknow.com, and there's all of the links and stuff like that to all the ticket sites, and they're on sale now. So we'll see everybody for the rest of the year, huh?
Yeah. And now how do we end the show? I don't even remember.
Oh, yeah. If you want to get in touch with us in the meantime, not to ask about parking or anything like that at any of the venues, you can email us at stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.